I came here with great difficulty, and I simply had no time to organize my lecture, call it a shiur, I don't care, because I have been so busy with my lambdas that I have no time for myself. I'm not has a shalom boastful, on the contrary. I have three shurim in New York and yeshiva. Now my shiur at the yeshiva is the shortest, it's 3 hour shiur. A little longer, it's 4 hours. I spent even today in the classroom 3 hours. No. And then I have a shiur in Moria for 2 hours. I have in Boston 2 shurim now, public shurim. One Saturday night in Chumash and Ramban. And whatever I'll tell you is an outgrowth of my shiur in Boston, which I said last Saturday night. And I have a shiur in Gemara Sunday morning between 11 and 1. And then in addition to it, I engage in private melambes. I can also, I study with my grandson, I study with my son-in-law, I study with my nephew. So, between private lessons, melambes. Oh, the music is off. If you are Rothschild, you will make melambes. I came, all right. I don't know why I came, anyway. Let me just try to analyze the Ramban. And again, I want to make the following remarks. My grandfather Reb Chaim has introduced a new method in the study of Aloha. As a matter of fact, it's not Reb Chaim, I once heard it to my father, and I simply didn't understand why my father said it, but finally, I mean, later I realized that he was right. He said it would have been impossible now to study with boys who are trained scientifically, Tere, if not for the method which my father, Papate, has developed. And this is true. Because the method of Reb Chaim is a very modern method. And it does not lag behind the most modern method developed by contemporary logic or metaphysics or philosophy, I can tell you that, and I'm not now in an apologetic mood. I mean, I don't apologize, it is true. That's why it is possible to study with boys who are by profession mathematicians and so forth. I mean, to study with them, and the boys enjoy it very much. Not only that, our method commands respect of the intellectual, of the modern intellectual. It's a method of conceptualization, of definition, classification, and particularly to look for unity in Allah. Not to be satisfied with a word, but understand that each word represents an idea. The idea should be properly defined and formulated and so forth. Not to worry about questions and not to try to answer kashas. This is not the main task of this was not the main task of Chaim, but simply to see the problem. The children of Rabbi Kleger, in the introduction to the Jewish Vechidur side, that Rabbi Kleger was a forerunner of Reb Chaim, basically. He foreshadowed, I mean, forecast Reb Chaim's method, basically. So he said, Leho Yosameach, Leho Yamitztayer al Akushio, Leho Yosameach Batiris. He never spent a sleepless night because of a kashe, nor did he rejoice in the teret. Important is not a kashe, important is not a teret, important is the problem. Once the problem is stated, whether or not the problem is soluble or is it not soluble, I mean, there are mathematical equations which are insoluble, and the mathematician does not lose much sleep on account of that. This is as far as Aloha is concerned. As far as Chumash is concerned, Tanakh, there was no Reb Chaim. And that's why our knowledge of Chumash of Tanakh is very limited. We know the text, we twist the text on Chumash, I mean, for homiletical purposes. We never try to conceptualize the Chumash, to read between the lines, and simply to see the world through the eyes of the Tanakh. I mean, I'm trying somehow to gain an insight into the world of the Chumash, I mean, the way Chazal has understood, and the way, I mean, our tradition has to see the image which our tradition has projected. And that's, I mean, one of the best mefarshim, not the best, one of the best mefarsh for that is the Ramban. The Ramban was very sensitive to every word of Chumash. His spiritual perceptions are so fine that actually they may be exploited and taken advantage of for the organization and construction of a modern philosophy of religion. In my opinion, the Ramban has contributed much more to the philosophy of religion and the Jewish world formula, to the Ashkenaz Elam, than the Meir Nebuchadnezzar. The Rambam was overeducated, overtrained. When you are overtrained and overeducated, willy-nilly you have to employ cliches. And you have to engage in a certain jargon which each generation develops. I mean, each philosophical school, each tkufe, each period develops a certain jargon. And the jargon shuts out the sight, I mean, of spiritual perceptions of the Rebbeinu Shalom, basically. I mean, the trouble is that the Rambam was a scholar trained in philosophy. The Ramban used more intuition than logic. Even though he was a great logician, he was very original, because there was no Aristotle or Plato or Socrates, I mean, to deprive him of his originality and uniqueness. And that's why I would recommend everybody to study Ramban the way you study Plato and Hesilis. Let me just try now to develop a more Ramban as Lech Lecha, because why should we so delve into the personality of Neach? So Neach is the father of humanity, so let it go into it. I would rather, I mean, give our attention, I mean, to Abraham, who is our father. Vayimer ad Hashem el Avraham, Lech Lecha me'artzecha me'moladetecha. No chidushim, just simple hermeneutics and simple understanding of the words of the Ramban, and to analyze, I mean, exactly what he wants. Vayimer ad Hashem el Avraham, Lech Lecha me'artzecha ומולדתך ומבית אביך לא רצה שעריך. Basically what I wrote down it since yesterday. I started to write yesterday afternoon. I wrote it down, I finished it at 3:15, Rabbi Feiner can bear witness to that. So basically it consists of two parts. One part I deal exclusively with a methodological problem. According to the Ramban, but I'm not going to deliver the paper, to read this paper, it will be too long. According to the Ramban, the Ramban calls Sefer Bereishis Sefer HaYetzirah. You have it. You have it here. I just want to... You have it here. It's a little funny. Sefer HaYetzirah. If we make a Sefer Bereishis or Sefer HaYetzirah, בחידוש העולם, ויציר אז כל מיצר, ובמקרה יאהב איס כולם, you have it? יש להם Sefer Bereishis. It's a time. Sefer HaYetzirah, יש לנו את. Yishlim HaKosef Sefer Breishis, the Apostle has concluded the book of Breishis. It is the book of Yitzirah, of creation, Genesis, of course. It is called Sefer Yitzirah because Chidush Haolam, there is the story of creation. Chidush Haolam Yitzirah is called Neitzar. So of course, I mean, so basically Sefer Yitzirah should be limited to the first two sections of Breishis. Down to Vaichulu, and perhaps the second section. Begin Brei Elikim Shomayim Voretz. Again, I mean, the story of the creation of man is repeated, the creation of Eve, the story of creation of Eve is told. But the Ramban says, no, the word Yetzirah embraces not only the section of Yetzirah Sarayim, but the entire book, down to the death of Jesus. With the Mikra Yehovah's column in the experiences, the story of the experiences of our patriarchs, Shehein Kein Yitziro Lezarom, because what happened to them is paradigmatic, I would say, or characteristic of events which, their descendants had a counter later. Mitnishikor Mikrayem, because what happened to them, all the events in the lives of the patriarchs, so Yurei Dvorim are just, I would say, are forecasts, or fortune, yes, or allusions, or symbols, Yurei Sulei Idia, in order to enlighten us, Kolosik Lavei Lohem, whatever the future holds in store for the Jewish people and such. According to the Ramban, it's not just paradise. The events in the lives of the fathers are not just paradise, or just symbols. Which ex post facto it means, in retrospect, wo ich try to interpret in terms of historical events or historical patterns. I mean, it is, or not only that those events are significant for the understanding of history. According to Ramban, there is predetermination. Whatever happened to the others has predetermined, I mean, the future development, the future trends and events of the Jewish history. The Ramban, that this is true, we have I ask you, where's Vayitzi? Vayavon Boaz, where is it? It's four. I know where Vayavon Boaz is, but... Vayavon Boaz. Ein noch klar. Ein noch klar. Our family to move. Tevin in Sid Cholatashes, you understand it with regard to all the sections, all the stories. I mean, with respect to the events which happened, which took in the lives of the patriarchs, of boys of all Frankies. We and God with Kirur are the same with the actor. It's a very important matter, to which, I mean, our sages have alluded. Briefly, the one who called Mashir Elov is similar to whatever happened to the fathers is significant as far as the as posterity is concerned. The Lochin Yarichu Aksuvim, that's why the Ksuvim are very, I mean, other extensive B'tzipur HaMasois in narrating, I mean, the wanderings of the Oveis, Vachfiras Aberes, the digging of the wells, Ushur HaMikrim and other events. The Yachshir HaChishiv and the, so to say, the casual reader might think, you know, in Dvorim, you saw him, it's completely superfluous. In them tell us there is no use, I mean, it's useless. The Kulam Boim Rela Meidah Le'asid, and every event which is narrated in the story of the Oveis actually forecasts a future event, a future experience, to be encountered by the Bnei Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. And then he says one sentence, Ki kasher yodei ha-mikra, this is the most important sentence. This in itself wouldn't be so, I mean, so sensational, but the Yach, kasher yodei ha-mikra le-novi, mishleishes rabbis, when one of the three patriarchs met with an experience, or witnessed an event, Yizbenen memenu ha-dovor ha-nigzer lovo le-zarei. You may derive from this event conclusions pertaining to events which will transpire in the history of the people. Kikashi. Veda kogzeras in any divine decree. When it is translated into reality, into historical experience, it means into a symbolic historical experience, once it has been, I mean, translated into an event in the life of an individual, so the decree can never be invalidated, will never be invalidated, will have to be later to be realized and fulfilled in the lives of the descendants. It means that Ramban speaks here about predeterminism. There is stories of the others, the lives of the others, have predetermined and fixed the events and experiences to be encountered by posterity. Well, of course, the problem is of predeterminism and freedom. I mean, for instance, according to Rabban Chum by Yisrish and Chum by Sheni, was already forecast and foreshadowed by certain events in the life of Yitzchok, the Sfiras HaBeres. According to the Sfiras HaBeres, one well is symbolic of Yisrish, the second well is symbolic of Sheni. This digging and filling in of the wells, I mean, actually represent actually the establishment or the construction of the bodies, and the destruction, the being a bias, a chum a bias. So what I mean, what's the use of when Yeshayo, I mean, address himself to the people and tell them if they'll sin, so that this annihilation will be destroyed, and they'll be deported, exiled from the land, and if they'll repent and amend their ways, then I mean, they'll remain an independent people, and the annihilation will continue to exist. throughout the centuries, I mean, it has been already predetermined by Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov and so forth on. This I have here, this is basically a paper, how the Ramban understands freedom in Jewish history, particularly Prirochopshis, as far as sin and Chile are concerned, while on the other hand, he wants to see, I mean, the events, the experiences of the old days as determining and fixing, I mean, the future course of history. This, but this is not now my problem. Let us start now. It's not my problem now, and this is a more philosophical paper. Let us engage in simple pshat. Rashi already raised the question, and the Chachmei Sforat picked up the question. They were also aware of this problem. Abraham left Ma'atzchom Ratechom Beis Avicho. Most probably, I mean, the Ramban is the only one who disagreed. But however, all Parshani HaMikro, all Chachmei HaMikro have concurred in the opinion that Ma'atzchom Ratechom Beis Avicho, by Ma'atzchom Ratechom Beis Avicho, is meant Chaldea, or Chaldea, not Choron. Because Abraham, according to them, according to Rashi, according to the Rambam, the Rambam also like that, the Rambam in Perek Aleph Milchas Avilizorev, when he gives the biography of Avraham, I mean, or project the image of Avraham, the profile of Avraham, so he speaks, I mean, in terms which actually, I mean, are quite clear and unequivocal that Abraham was a native in Ur Kasdim, in Chaldea. And then the Ma'atzchom Moladetechom Beis Avicho Loretz Asha'areko, I mean, was related to his place of birth, and to his ancestral home in Ur Kasdim. Yes, this is the case. So Abraham left Ur Kasdim long before his birthplace, long before the command of Lech Lecho was addressed to him. We read in Each, Vayikach Tereches Avraham Bnei, Veslei Ben Horon Ben Bnei, Vesorek Alose Yeshes Avraham Bnei, Vayetzi Itom Meur Kadim Olechet Artek Noam, Vayove Yad Choron Vayeshu Shom. Rashi says here, Rashi tries to resolve this difficulty by rearranging the order of the verse, or the structure, as the verse of Lech Lecho Me'artzecho Me'laretecho Me'beis Avicho. He said as follows, Me'artzecho Balikvo Yotso Mishom Im Oviv Ubo Ad Lechoron Elokacho Me'lei Yisrachik Eid Mishom Vetei Me'beis Avicho. Go still further away from your native land and depart, continue to remove yourself from your native land and leave your father's home, which was established in Choron. It seems that Rashi places the emphasis upon Beis Avicho, which was established in Choron. The pasuk, if reconstructed according to Rashi, would read as follows. I would say he's trying to reconstruct Lech Lecho Me'beis Avicho. The Beis Avicho should come first. Go away from your ancestral home, which was established by Terach in Choron, and by so doing, you will remove yourself still further from your native land and place of birth. I mean, this is Rashi's answer, more or less. Anyway, according to Rashi, Terach's migration from Ur Kasdim, from Chaldea to Choron, was the result of a voluntary decision. No one told him to do so, because the order addressed to Abraham, I mean, did not precede Terach's migration to Choron, but followed it. The Ebn Ezra disagreed with Rashi, with Rashi's interpretation. The Ebn Ezra rearranges not the psukim, but the chronology, in Mugdim Menucha Bat Ezra. The instructions, according to Ibn Ezra, the Rabbi Lov, the Ramban says, take a look at Ramban. The Rabbi Avraham Piresh, you have it? The Rabbi Avraham Piresh, who kvor omar Hashem el Avraham, lech lecho me'artzcho, ki ha'dibur hazeh, hoyo, בעידנו בורקזדין, ושום ציבור לעזב ארצי ומלדתי ובייס אוביס אשר שום. זה הכל זה בן עזרה, the instructions to depart from Ur Kasdin were revealed to Abraham prior to Terach's migration to Chor. The verses of 1-3 Lech Lecho, of Lech Lecho 1-3, according to Ebenezer, operating the principle Mugdu Mucha Batere, belong into the section of Neach. Before the verse 31, Vayikach Terach, the reconstructed parasha would read as follows. ותיסר אל הקורו אין לבלות, נח. ויאמר עד השם על אברהם, לך לך מארצך ומולדתך ומבית אביך אל אורץ אשר אראך, ויעשך לגיא גדול, אברכך וגד לשמך, ויהי ברכה ואברכך ומברכך ומקלל כעיר, ונברך כל משפחי סדומו, ויקח תרח את אברהם בני, וסלייבד נוחיל, this is the question by the Rambam, and that's exactly the question which we will deal with. It's the main question. ויקח תרח את אברהם בני, וסלייבד נורם בן בני, וסורק אלוסי, איש את אברהם בני, וייצא איתו מורכזים, הולך את ארץ הכנען, ויובע את חורן, וישו שם, ויהי מתי החום השונו, מצרים שונו, ויום אסתר הבכור. How would the parasha לך לכו סטארט? וילך אברהם כאשר דיבר אל עבד השם, וילך יתלית, ואברהם בחומש ושבעים שנה בצאת נחור. It means the first phase of the sophistry of the journey, I mean, is narrated in Neach, which is from Ur Kasdin, from Chaldea to Choron. The second phase of the migration, I mean, is recorded in Lech Lecho, Lecho from Choron into Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban refused to accept it. Why did the Ramban refuse to accept it? Simply because the central figure, as far as the migration from Ur Kasdin to Choron, is Terach, not Avraham. There is no Nochin, the Ramban says. You have it, Ramban? There is no Nochin. Ki im kein oya Avraham ikach ha-nisiyo mi-beis aref. It means Avraham should have taken the initiative. And Avraham should have been the one who organized this journey. The mitzvah of Hashem in compliance with the word of God. The terach of it birtzei nafshei olach. And the part of terach was just a spontaneous decision. V'akosu v'imer, and v'akosu says, v'yikach terach es Avraham bnei yere, I mean it appears, as if ki Avraham achrei oviv olach, u'ba'atzosei yotzei me'eretz k'nan. It appears as if Avraham just, I mean, was obedient to his father and followed, I mean, his footsteps as they followed him, I mean, into Choron. That's what I'm asking. It's a very serious question. In other words, it appears from the story in Inear that Terach took the initiative and he advanced the thought of migrating from Ur Kasdin, that Abraham followed on his father and did not act independently in conformity with God's word or instructions. This is what I'm asking. If we should accept the interpretation of the Ibn Ezra, we could solve another riddle. Let us, I mean, I'll come back to the problem which the Ramban has pondered. Chazal, our sages have stated that Terach repented and embraced the new faith in which his son was preaching. And the Terach finally surrendered to the Lekei Avraham, whom he couldn't see, and whom he couldn't understand. Chazal, Rashi quotes Chazal, have derived this conclusion. It's almost sensational. Because the Pasuk in Yeshua says, Be'ezer ano Yoshua v'seichem Eilom, Terach avi Avraham v'avi Nocher v'yavdolim acherim. As if Terach actually had changed, repented, and embraced Avraham's faith, so that Pasuk would have mentioned. But however, I mean, Chazal said so. Rashi quotes this Chazal, this Maimer, in Lech Lecho. V'ata tovi b'sholim ala b'yisecho, v'kovi b'sheivo g'deilo. So Rashi says, Ovi v'evi d'avei d'zore oyo, v'u m'vasri sh'yove eilo. Father was an idol worshiper, an idolater. And Almighty tells Abraham that he'll join his father. what kind of a psoel? Melamed, or melandoch, shiosa terachche. The immediate conclusion to be inferred from this message is that terach was converted to the faith of Avraham and became a tzadik gomor. It means leilam habo, in the world to come. In the future world, I mean, terach will join, Avraham will join terach. It's not only the terach about tshuva, but terach's madrege, what do you call it? No, I mean, it has all speak. Terach status or station leilam habo is almost equal to that of Abraham. Because the pasuk said, v'ato tove b'sholem al v'secho, t'kova b'sevim. I'm not asking any questions, I'm just trying to understand what has happened. However, what we miss is the direct tale of Terach's conversion, of Terach's church. The Chumash should have told us directly, maybe this is just an indirect inference, I mean, but you told us directly that Terach was converted to the faith of Abraham and embraced, I mean, delicate Israel. And also I would like to know the exact moment at which Terach did realize the futility of an idolatrous life and the absurdity of the entire pagan civilization, and he came and somehow embraced the Avraham's new theory. When did it happen? After all, let us see it against the background, against the backdrop of Terach in his relation to Abraham, I mean, before he was converted. After all, according to the Haggadah, Terach conspired, whenever the king was, let's be Nimrod, to destroy Abraham physically and spiritually, according to the Haggadah. He was the one who informed the king of Abraham's blasphemous behavior vis-a-vis the images of the gods of Chaldea. It was Terach who wanted Abraham to be executed, and who, if not for the miraculous intervention of the Almighty, would have succeeded in implementing that plan. I want to add something. Chazal tell us the story about Terach informing the king of the authority about Abraham's abusive treatment from the idols and the gods of Chaldea, and the fact that Chazal, I mean, has emphasized the one who informed the king was Terach is indicative of something else. Usually hatred between father and son. It happens quite often now. Antagonism between father and son. And usually the hatred is on the part of the son vis-à-vis the father. It's not frequent that father should hate the son. Yeah. But when it happens, then such hatred, such hate, such antagonism, such enmity borders on the psychopathic. It's not normal. Hostility, while hatred of a stranger, hatred of a stranger, of a person, I mean, some people you don't like, I mean, I wouldn't use the term hatred, you don't like. We feel some antagonism vis-à-vis them. So enmity vis-à-vis a stranger is not always a manifestation of some mental aberration or of a sick mind. Sometimes it's quite rational. I don't say it's not noble. It is a destructive emotion, but does not manifest insanity or mental aberration. Enmity, hostility, any kind of hostility between father and son, even if it's expressed in the most modern terms, modern sophisticated terms, we have many terms now to express hostility between father and son, or tension between father and son, or daughter, mother and daughter, is any kind of tension, hostility, or enmity is due to some, to is a result of a sick soul and a personality which is permeated with hatred and which finds delight in destroying. It is insanity, basically. So Chazal wanted, when Chazal tells the story about Terach informing Nimrod of Abram's blasphemous attitude of stand vis-a-vis the idols, Chazal wants to emphasize that he was sick with Terach, was sick with hostility, sick with hatred vis-a-vis his son. Because he saw his son destroying the whole world. His whole life, everything he stood for, fought for, loved for, defended for, lived for. That's the one. And suddenly, the same Chazal, the same Chachmei Talmud, Chachmei Midrash, tell us that Terach repented. When did this remarkable change in Terach occur? Why did not the Bible tell us about it? About this wondrous transformation? I believe it according to Ibn Ezra, not only according to Ibn Ezra, but even according to Rashi. But we are now interested in Ibn Ezra because the Ramban raised objection. According to Ibn Ezra and according to Rashi, the answer is simple. This unbelievable change took place, when Terah decided to abandon Ur Kasdim and to migrate to Chor. Basically, it's a very strange decision. It was a very strange decision. Because it is Terach again. If we see him against the backdrop of the Midrash in Agode, Terach was a prominent citizen in Ur Kasdim. Even according to one Agode, he was a member of the royal council. He even was related to the royal household. And suddenly, Chaldea, you see, when you speak about Chor and Chaldea, is to us, it's a simple matter. Simple matter to buy a ticket and to get on the plane and to fly from Ur Kasdim to Chaldea. And it is simple for our brother in Eretz Israel, that all the entire American Jewish community should get on tonight on the plane and come to Eretz Israel. Yeah, it's simple. There is no problem involved. It wasn't so simple. Because we know very well what kind of a country Chaldea was. We have a lot of, evidence, documentary evidence, which bear witness as to the character and to the nature of the Chaldean society and the Choron society. Chaldea was the most developed country in antiquity. Next comes Egypt, but Chaldea was ahead of Egypt, basically. As a matter of fact, astronomical tables. Was very developed and, of course, relatively developed industrially, technologically, very advanced. The wondrous gardens, the hanging gardens, the suspended gardens, very well about them. And the society was quite sophisticated. We uncover now, documents which are so indicative of a sophisticated, progressive, and modern society. And it also was a very disciplined country. To leave such a country and to emigrate from Ur Kasdim with the intention of settling in Choron, which in comparison with Ur Kasdim was very primitive. The society, when you read the Chumash, you don't need to go too far, society was a pastoral one. Not even agriculture was developed in Choron and in Canaan. It was a pastoral society which in comparison with the Chaldean was primitive in appearance. Usually one leaves the land with a lower civilization in order to migrate to a country with a higher civilization. To act the reverse of that principle is not too, it's unusual. What prompted Terach to act so strangely? What motivated him to break up his home and to uproot his household and to abandon luxury, whatever he had there, convenience, renown, influence and power, and become a wanderer, an immigrant, or a straying Chaldean, as Aram HaLidovia may. The answer is simple. He will choose. I ask, where did the Torah tell us about this wondrous, miraculous transformation in the mind and the heart of of the, I would say, he was actually the idolater in Chaldea. According to the Chazal, he was a manufacturer of idols. It's not a question of manufacturing. He was the father of the idolatrous philosophy and ideology. I mean, respected and revered by an idolatrous society. But why suddenly, I mean, abandon everything and go forth to a primitive country? He wrote Shuhe. The realization that whatever he stood for and fought for is absurd, the great disenchantment in a highly disciplined and advanced pagan civilization, and the thought that perhaps Issan Abraham was right, and that the novel and shocking ideas he has been preaching for so long reflect the divine truth. This is exactly what made Terach decide to abandon his country. In a word, the reappraisal of the Baal Tshuva is responsible for the decision to leave all Chaldea and start out for a primitive land, either in Haran or in Eretz Israel, but apparently with the intention to begin life anew from the scratch. As a matter of fact, it's very strange, according to Nebra. It's not as simple as Ramban considered. The divine decree addressed to Abraham to leave country and home and go forth to unknown land coincided with the great transformation or metamorphosis which took place within Terach's personality. It wasn't just a coincidence in time. God actually waited for this moment to arrive. And as soon as this moment of change arrived, and Terach was ready to migrate, to leave, to abandon everything, I mean, it's a supreme sacrifice. Lame Chaderech, you know what Chazal described in their unique way what immigration means. How destructive immigration is, when a man uproots himself and dislocates himself completely and becomes homeless. This great decision, this great change in Terach didn't just coincide with the revelation of God to Abraham, but God waited for this great change. And once Terach has arrived at the final decision, the final conclusion, so immediately the message came through to Abraham, you go for. The God's commandment to Abraham to emigrate from Ur Chaldea came at the same time when Terach had undergone the great dramatic change and had decided to give everything up and go forth to a new world. The Torah doesn't tell us, it's really very hard to guess, whether Terach knew of Abraham's rendezvous with the invisible God. How much Terach knew about Abraham, we don't know. You know, I mean, the gaps in the Torah are sometimes shocking. But the Torah did not tell us things which are irrelevant to the main development or unfolding of ideas. I mean, I'm just departing from my text. Very strange. Do you know what did Abraham look like? Was he tall? Was he short? Was he heavy? Or was he thin? Was he dark? Or was he light? Was he blonde or brunette? Or taller? Was he a human being? What kind of a complexion did he have? The Torah doesn't tell us. In Tanakh you find about it. About David, the Torah tells us. The Tanakh tells us. Admeni, Feyanayim, Feyanayim. About Shaul, Mishich Meir Lomailo, Mikol, Leim Shich Meir Lomailo, and so forth on. In Chumash, there is not a single description of the countenance or the personality of the person. Yes, but we find for it when the Torah says, Yifafir Fasmare in two places. With regard to Yosef, with reference to Rochu, and with Rochu, not the contrary, in the Iraqis, and with respect to Sore, Ato Yodati Kishi Fasmare. Why did the Torah introduce, physical traits, the description of physical traits, because it's important as far as the relevance to the unfolding of the of events. If Sora had not been many means he was mature. It's important, to develop a vision. In the Torah there is not a single departure from the highway which leads straight to the destination which the Torah is headed for. Destination means the unfolding of the drama of a covenantal community and the realization of a great vision, which has been foreshadowed, by the patriarchs. As a matter of fact, if you take, there is one place I find in the Torah, where the Torah somehow departs and takes, I would say, a country road and leaves the highway. When Avram went to the Har HaMoriah, Vayibayi Mashlish Vayis Avram Esayim Vayarat Amokim Rochei. Apparently, during what happened after all, Avram met people, and perhaps Avram was in, Avram, I don't know that Avram knew the way to the Har HaMoriah or didn't, by the way. He might have inquired of people. How to get to the Har HaMoriah, or to the Eretz HaMoriah, he inquired. The Torah doesn't tell us, not at all. But the Torah is only bent on one subject matter. Subject matter is Avram's compliance and in with the divine order. If you take, there is one place I find in the Torah, where the Torah somehow departs and takes, I would say, a country road and leaves the highway. When Avram went to the Har HaMoriah, apparently, during what happened after all, Avram met people, and perhaps Avram was in, Avram, I don't know that Avram knew the way to the Har HaMoriah or didn't, by the way. He might have inquired of people. How to get to the Har HaMoriah, or to the Eretz HaMoriah, he inquired. The Torah doesn't tell us, not at all. But the Torah is only bent on one subject matter. Subject matter is Avram's compliance and in with the divine order, and the sacrifice of Yitzchok and all that. Interesting is, when Yosef went out to search for his brothers, so the Torah for one moment departs from narrating the main story and tells us Vayimtzui Ish Teyeh Batsoneh. There was no need. He sent him to Shechem. So the Torah says, Vayov Shechem, and the Motzei Shechem, Vayov Deisam. The Torah is not interested to tell us, what happened between and who directed him to Dayton. But still the Torah has departed from narrating the main story, the main fabula, and has said, by in theory, ish teyeh basadi. You know why? That was prompted Chazal to say, Zeru Davriel. That basically, that Yosef's mission was not basically planned by Jacob. Even Jacob was the one who sent Yosef, who charged Yosef with the mission, of finding his brother. Jacob shouldn't have done it, for a simple reason, Ramban or not, because he knew very well the enmity between the brothers and Yosef, and exposed them to danger, He knew very well. Why didn't Yosef do it? But Chazal say, actually, he was constrained. He was forced to do it. The divine providence has led Jacob, had made Jacob to give the order, the mandate, to Yosef to find his brother. And when the mandate, Yosef could not carry out the mandate because he didn't find him in Shechem, someone else intervened. Who is someone? Gabriel. It is someone mysterious. Because the covenant had to be realized. And the old prediction or the old saying by God, Kikir Yizaracha, had to be translated into reality. Of course, the Torah is not interested to tell us actually how much the Torah know about Jacob. reading all about his rendezvous with God in, under the starry skies of Chaldea. It's hard to ascertain, you don't know. Equally difficult is to know, is to answer. Equally difficult to answer is the question whether Abraham ever told Terach about the instructions to receive from God pertaining to the journey to Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan. We don't know, you know, whether Terach was let in this secret, or Abraham confided in Terach, or did not confide. We don't know. The Terach doesn't tell us. However, only this is irrelevant. What is important is that the Lech Lech message came through when Abraham began to pack his bags and make himself ready for the journey. He found out to his great surprise that his father's bags had been packed long ago. This is important. Father and son, it's very dramatic, father and son were locked in mortal combat, in mortal struggle, have joined hands and started out on the great march to Canaan. Now, I believe the objection which the Ramban raised against Ibn Ezra, that the order was given to Abraham prior to his departure from Mukazin, and Rabban points out that the Tere introduces Terach as the hero, as the central figure of this adventure, but not Abraham. I believe this objection, the objection to the view of Ibn Ezra, is not very disturbing, not very disturbing. The Torah is more interested in the metamorphosis that took place in Terach then in Abraham's compliance with the Word of God. That Abraham complied with the Word of God is known. And the Torah will have many opportunities to tell us about it. Many opportunities. The finest opportunity the Torah had is the episode of the Akedah to demonstrate his loyalty, his total commitment, and so forth. Right? The greatest story in the Torah here in the Ark is not Abraham's compliance. It is the tshuva after. And the greatest story of the Baal Tshuva is implicitly contained in the verse of Vayikach Kerach. This spontaneous decision to abandon everything he stood for, loved, and defended, the change from an idolater into a member of Abraham's household, fellowship, his emigration from Kazdin, is the great miracle in which the Torah is interested to tell us, and with which the Torah is concerned. Of course, the Torah tells us in a few words, in one verse, but the verse is not just a story about a journey, a story about a dramatic change in a great person. Abraham emerged victorious. Perhaps it's one of the great victories of Abraham. He convinced his own father. On the whole, Abraham had very limited luck with his family. He couldn't convert his brother Nocher. The Horon was there. He couldn't convert Nocher. Psuel was not converted. The Horon was there. Idolater. I mean, he had limited luck, limited success, even with his very devoted nephew, Lot. I don't remember where I came across this shot. The problem of Locho, what Locho is, you know, what Rashi says, or the Ramban. I saw somewhere, I don't remember, that Locho means, in English, for thyself, it means you alone, don't take along anybody of your household, of your family. Just you and Sol go forth there. What could Avram do? Late? What technologisch weg? Vayelach it late, don't he? All right, since late accompanied him, trailed behind him, Avram had to take care of late, to supervise him, to teach him, to train him. So the passage says, Vayelach it late. Vayelach Avram, kasher diberin av Adeshem, Vayelach it late. Late trailed behind. Avram didn't want it. It might, Avram might have said to him, listen, you stay home in Choron, why do you have to start out an adventurous journey? What are you looking for? What are you searching? But apparently Leith refused. Leith had his sense of loyalty. Chazal had emphasized that. Leith had his sense of loyalty, of devotion to Abraham. No, once Leith trailed behind him, so by Yikra Avram, Esor HaYishte V'Sleid Benochim, it means he guided him, he led him, he trained him, he taught him. But he had the, no, of course you know the Rashi, we all know the Rashi, by Yifra Leit is Kikra Yavein, so the famous explanation by Leit, and in the Reit Zib Avram, the Leit Elekov. I have no use for Abraham, nor do I have any use for his God. I mean, he had very limited success. However, he had great success with his father. And basically it's important, because the great teacher must be capable of influencing his whole family. If one failed vis-a-vis his family in handing down to them his convictions, his ideals, in passing on his vision, his aspirations, his hopes, he cannot be a teacher, a great teacher, as far as strangers are concerned. Teaching begins at home. And how could Avram become the great teacher of nations? Avram and Gehem and Adira. If he had failed so miserably with Nocher, he failed miserably with Psuel, failed miserably with Leit. The answer is yes, but he was successful with one member of his household, with Terach. As a matter of fact, Avram emerged victorious, he convinced, he converted his own father, and I would say Abraham did not tell anything. He set Terach ready to start out on the journey. He feigned obedience and officially followed his father. He kept himself in the background. First of all, there is Kibud Av. The Rambam passing that Kibud Av, one is due, Kibud Av is due even to a father who is a Roshe, but Terach was the great Baal Tshuva. So certainly Avram was obligated, I mean, to give him respect. I mean, but not only because of Kibud Av. Another reason has prompted Avram to keep himself in the background and not to interfere with Terach, and let Terach appear as the initiator, as the one who leads his family, the one who actually, I mean, has arrived at the revolutionary decision to leave Ur Kasdim, because Terach was indeed a hero. He was the Baal Tshuva. Abraham remained in the background. He knew well the Mokim Shebaal Tshuva in the Tzadikim Gemurim in Echil Muhammad. The Terach departure is a heroic performance, and that only a great man could rise to such heights of heroic action. Interesting is the Midrash. The Pasuk in Yev. Miyitein mitomi toer, alu yechol. A very strange pasuk, a very difficult pasuk. Gemara Nida says, miyitein dam cholof midav, cholof midav. And Midrash says, miyitein mitomi toer, who can actually make a tome to yield tar? You have the rule, ayitim na tome, tome ayitim na toer toer, alu yechol, only God, the Almighty. Pasuk in Yev. So that Midrash says, Avram et Terach. Why Avram et Terach? The answer is as follows. Avram was a prophet. Avram has his rendezvous with God. God, I mean, reached the covenant with Abraham. Of course, Avram was hallowed as a prophet, as the father of the nation. But Avram was a great man. In the natural terms. Avram, after all, Avram didn't start this prophecy. In this regard, Avram already was aware of the distinction between Avram and Meshe. Meshe started out as a prophet. Meshe did not search God at the very outset. Meshe was completely absorbed and immersed in his daily activities. Meshe already saying faith to Israel. But suddenly God actually imposed himself upon Meshe. He converged upon himself. He forced him, I mean, to face eternity and to change his life and simply, I mean, and to reach a covenant with him, I mean. Meshe, you know, Meshe pleaded with God, and did not accept the mission immediately. Avram searched God before God revealed himself to Abraham. he said she was questioning for him. Avraham had many questions. The most beautiful biography of Avraham, the image, the profile of Avraham, is projected by the Rambam. Who he says, if I remember exactly, he himself in Mushkabo Kazdin, he was immersed in Avigizore idolatry, and himself worshipped the idols, but Libi Hoyom Mishaped, he was restless. His mind was exploring. He was dissatisfied. He had many doubts, many questions. So Abraham, who was had imaginative, in great imagination, he had vision. His mind was that of a genius. He asked questions and rejected false answers. There was depth to his intuition. There was breadth to his understanding. There was greatness to the entire personality. Otherwise, he would have never become Abraham. Otherwise, God wouldn't have chosen him as the prophet, as the teacher, as the Adam in Gain, as the father of all nations. All right, you know very well, talents, capabilities, capacities are not just, passed on from nowhere. They are hereditary. Who gave it to him? Who passed it on to him? Who handed it down to him? The greatness already, but the trouble is Terach wasted his talent. He didn't utilize the talent, like many of us. We don't utilize our talents, for the proper constructive purposes. But Abraham actually, in Abraham, the talents found the proper person and the opportunity, fruition and realization. This is the Tome Toer Ale Echot V'Avro Mitrach. There's another problem here. El Oretz Asher HaRekon. We all know what Rashi says, El Oretz Asher HaRekon. Le'om Alei, Yed Rashi here? El Oretz Asher HaRekon. Just a moment. Le'gil is Oretz. It is not revealed to him the identity of the land. Kid Miliad Kedim Lechabur Beinov. Le'lof Lezchah Kol Dibu V'Dibu. El Rashi quotes the Akedah as well. In the Akedah also was, Lech Lecha L'Eretz Amirio, V'Alei Yusham Le'ilo, Alach Ador Im Asherim Alecha. He did not designate the mount, you'll see the mount will be pointed out to you when you are rising L'Eretz Amirio. V'Yibayim Ashlisa Yivom Esinach. But there is quite a difference between the command of Lech Lecha and the command of Lech Lecha L'Eretz Amirio. In L'Eretz Amirio he told Abraham where to go. He told him the destination, Eretz Amirio. Abraham knew more or less where the Eretz Amirio is. He was. He just didn't reveal to him the identity of the mount. Alright? So this is simple matter. Here when he said to him, Lech lecho me'artzecho me'nabitecho u'me'beis savicho, elo Eretz Asher HaRekho. He didn't tell him southward, proceed southward. Nor did he tell him proceed northward, or eastward, or westward. There's so many directions. So actually, where did Abraham go? So the Ramban says, when you made it there, you go all goy, you wander from people to people, and you go all the way, and you go all the way to Knaan. You wander with the Rachel, and you go all the way to the sky, and you go all the way to the sky, and you go all the way to the sky. And what he said, ויקח אברהם מסור האישתי, ויצאו ללכת ארץ הכנען, ויביאו ארץ הכנען, לא נשיאה שבו. כי עדיין לא יודע כי אורץ ההיא מצטווה. אלא שאורך הסד יגדר כהי דרך ארץ כנען. כי כאילו הוא יבדייתי ובדעס עודיס גם מתחילו, בתייסו מורכזים. ומפני זה אומר ויקח אשר איסו איסי הלכים מביסורי, כי הוא יותה כסה אלי. ועוד איזה רמבן הוא לא מתכווה. Anyway, the Ramban touches here upon a very important subject, namely, how did Abraham guess where he was supposed to go, to move? The Ramban, like Rashi, held the view that the Almighty did not specify the place where he wants Abraham to settle or to arrive, but ordered him in general terms to go forth from his native land. Why, the question arises, how could Abraham know? He needed to go, actually. He needed to go. Hear the word, write the word, tell the word, another word, I mean. When Abraham was instructed, sometime later, to sacrifice Yitzchak, the Almighty told him specifically, Rechalach and Samaria, and gave him the land of the Maria. Abraham knew it, where he was supposed to travel. Even though the mount upon which the sacrifice was supposed to take place was not singled out. And the order addressed to Abraham in Ur Kasdim did not entail any specifics. That's what the Ramban refers by saying, Vayikasher Isu Eser Etime Beisori. It's a very strange phrase, Vayikasher Isu. He should have said, Vayikasher Lokochani Etime Beisori. It's simple. Or Vayikasher Kasher Imichuni Etime Beisori. Simpler. It's Vayikasher Isu Eser Etime. I check translations and they say, it took me out of my father's home. But this is not correct. This does not actually, I mean, convey the semantics of Isu. What does Isu mean? I would say Kasher Isu came, and it came to pass when God caused me to be lost. To be murdered, confused. And Ramban asked something. Kibohoya made it kiseile. He wandered like a stray sheep. Not knowing, I mean, where to start and how to get back, how to return home. The Ramban emphasizes indeed, Abraham was confused and perplexed like a stray sheep. In other words, very strange. God could have told him, go southward, it was southward. From Syria, from Haran to Israel. He didn't say a single word. Lech lecha, el orat ha-shareta. Where the land is? God didn't specify. There was no compass, I mean, to guide Abraham. God did not guide Abraham. He wanted to bewilder him. Kasher Yisro Yisro Yisro. He completely mystified and confounded. He told him to move on, to go forth, where? El Eretz Shareka. How is the land to be found? Where is the land to be found? In the east or in the west? No hint was disclosed to Abraham. God willed Abraham. What did God will Abraham? He confused him, bewildered him. Abraham was perplexed, like a stray sheep, he said. He wanted Abraham to find, to discover the proper land by himself. He wanted Abraham to guess, to find out intuitively, to somehow smell the land from afar. It's a very strange request of Abraham. He wanted somehow he should even magically feel the pull that the land exerts upon people, to be attracted by the land spontaneously. And he wanted Abraham intuitively to be fascinated by the land. And this intuition, this subconscious intuition, should guide Abraham into Eretz Canaan. The way, I mean, birds are guided flying south in fall or returning home in the spring. They don't know where they are going. It's a mechanical push. We don't know scientifically actually what guides them. There are many theories, but none is certain. But there is some mechanical push. There is some inner instinct which actually guides them to their destination. And apparently the Rebbeinu Shlomo wanted Abraham to be guided not by his mind, but by his heart. Not by logic, but by intuition. Abraham should not only comply with the word of God. He should develop in himself the capacity for distinguishing between Kedesh Rachel, between holiness, I mean, and profanity, between Eretz Canaan and other lands. He didn't give him any criteria. No hints were disclosed to Abraham. Abraham by himself, by his personal genius, by his personal intuition, must be guided and led to Eretz Canaan. It's a very strange task. It's a very difficult mandate. And Abraham been mistaken in his adventurous selection of land. It was an adventure. Everything would have been lost. Abraham would not have been the chosen leader and patriarch. It's a pasuk. Atu Adishem Melekim Asher Bocharto Be'Avram Ve'Tzeisenu Kalvin Ve'Samto Shmei Avram. It is very strange. Thou art the God who has chosen Abraham and took him out of Ur Kalvin and changed his name into Abraham. Basically, the order is not chronologically, it does not follow, the proper chronology. Because actually, God has chosen Abraham after arriving in Eretz Kanaan. And then his name was changed from Avram into Abraham. This was the sign and the token and the symbol of charismatic, choice and selection, elevation. But this is what the pasuk wants to convey is that the exodus from Chaldea and the task with which Avram was charged to find the land presented Abraham with the crucial test of whether or not he is worthy of the divine charisma and divine individual attention and elevation to the great height of Avraham Avinu. The test did consist in Abraham's conforming to the divine decree, Lech Lecha, this was an easy matter, but in his uncanny intuition concerning the destination of his travels and wanderings. And apparently Abraham has guessed right. He felt, without being able to explain his feelings, that the destination is Canaan. And that's why Abraham headed toward Canaan long before God revealed himself and told him, Lezarachu etei nesorat adem. You found the right land. Vayikach Avraham nesora ishte, vesleit benochis, vayetzu lamechet sartu Canaan, vayodeyu hartu Canaan. Of course, the emphasis is upon vayetzu lamechet sartu Canaan. However, there is something else. If you look into the Ramban and you read it carefully, the Ramban says something else. Ki alorat sahi nitztavo, ki adayin leyoda ki alorat sahi nitztavo. Elo sheoch ha-sadik darkei garech eretz Kanaan. It was just guessing, sheer guessing on his part. Ki kein hoyo bedaitei, that's the way he felt, when he came to bedaitei, this is the way he intuitively felt. That's all. Intuitively felt. It was not no logic involved in it. There was no discursive thinking involved, because he had no premises with which to work. If you want to think out a problem in discursive terms, you need premises. The behavior had no premises. Everything was done ex nihilo, so to say. Because Terach also had a klo leches after Klo. Why did Ramban introduce the Asaris? Ramban points out something very interesting. Not only was Abraham blessed with the uncanny intuition, but Terach as well. The latter was determined to travel to Canaan. Vayikach Terach es Avram bnei, vayetzi item dochim besoro yekalosei, vayetzi item merkazim olechet sarf Canaan. His father also fell the mysterious pull that this land exerted upon those who search meaning and a rationale in creation and are questing for God. Kimo yabudaitim vedasoviv, gam mitchino v'teiso merkazim. Why was Canaan chosen first by Terach and later by Abraham? Or as we said, intuitively, subconsciously, almost mechanically. It's somehow a response which is not explainable in rational terms. A response to what? After all, if you speak about tradition, something must arouse in tradition. There should be some stimulus. You respond to stimulus. You don't respond, to nothing. What was the stimulus? What attracted? What fascinated? What pulled him? Wo trägt ihn, die träge Kerl? Kerach as well as, everything. What? There should be stimulus. There is no response without the stimulus, you know that? And here is the central idea in Yahadus. Comes to expression. You'll ask me, what was pulling Abraham to Eretz Kanaan outward? What was pulling Kerach southward to Eretz Kanaan? The idea of Kedusha. This was perhaps the greatest discovery made by Abraham. The day Ramadan, people respond always. People not only Abraham, all generations, since Bria Sayyidam, since the creation of the world, until this day, respond to some stimulus. And they usually respond not logically. Usually they respond not in terms of discursive thought, not in terms of utilitarian and pragmatic consideration. They respond blindly, mechanically, spontaneously, without thinking. The major decisions in one's life, the major decisions, secondary decisions are reached on the basis of calculations, of calculating thinking. I mean, you simply weigh the pros and the cons, profit and loss, and you finally arrive at a conclusion slowly and cautiously and carefully. But major decisions in life come suddenly, intuitively. There's no calculating mind. There is a passionate heart which reaches the decision and tells men to act. This is basic. This is true. I mean, if you analyze your own life, I mean, you'll find it out. So people respond to stimulus. People respond to a challenge. It's a powerful challenge. Basically, the Bera Marvel also responded. The ordinary Rishon already responded. Have an ordinary Rishon. They responded to the challenge of the Itada. But the Bera Marvel responded to a challenge. To what challenge did the Bera Marvel respond? To the challenge of beauty. The Bera Marvel thought that beauty is fascinating, and that one must succumb to beauty, yield to the power of beauty. There are modern thoughts that one must respond quickly to the aesthetic challenge, to succumb to the beautiful and the pleasant. It means if you respond quickly to that challenge, it means that challenge is the central goal, the central objective of man. Vayu bnei alekim ez bnei seodom. Ki teve seno, vayikru lehem noshi nekila shabachor. They responded to the fair woman, which is the symbol of beauty. As a matter of fact, mother man still is a captive of beauty, of the aesthetic experience. But you've got to understand, under aesthetic experience means not only just beauty in the sense of, but we understand the colloquial English sense of symmetry and so forth, harmony and so forth, but it means that, I mean, it means an entire world view, I mean, which revolves about men enjoying life, taking advantage of life, exploiting opportunities, I mean, always availing himself of various possibilities. This is still, modern man is still a captive of beauty. The Dera Floge also responded. As a matter of fact, the idea of beauty was introduced by the Nochash. Nechmod Ulayinai. This was the response of Eve to the Itzadar. Of course, it was passed on to future generations. Finally, beauty, I mean, resulted in a deluge. The aesthetic society disintegrated by itself and imperished. This is basically now. What's wrong now? I mean, speak about the revolt of the campuses, I mean, rebellion. What do they want? To what do they challenge? Even the hippies with their long beards and their neglected appearance. It is the aesthetic experience. To enjoy everything. No restraints, no checks, no controls. This is a static experience. The static experience basically is an infinite experience. It's boundless. You want to grab as much as possible. You reach out for the impossible. There are no laws which prevent man, which control man, which discipline man. Basically, the aesthetic experience, in contradistinction to the ethical experience, resents discipline. While ethical experience recommends discipline, because ethical experience expresses itself through disciplined life. In real life, through discipline, self-control, and self-restraint, the aesthetic experience resents discipline. All barriers are torn down. All senses are abandoned. All restraints are resented. I do what I like. What do I like? Whatever is pleasant, whatever is comfortable. I resent all authorities. I resent tradition. I resent everything. I resent the past. I'm not interested in the future. There's only one moment, the fleeting present. The Dora of Logisthought, the Dora of Logisthought, but a different philosophy. That the great challenge of man is power. When men should not enjoy life, men should be powerful and important. The great challenge is if man sets up himself as God, as an idol. Technological achievement, basically that's the last law, technological achievement. Of course, in terms of antiquity, the Dera's law of thought puzzles man. Holds him prisoner, makes him worthy of being man. The Jews who made technological achievement and man's control, partial control, or limited control, over his environment possible, should be worshipped. And of course, the communist society is not a Vera model, don't you know? We're making a mistake. That's the weakness on the part of the Western society on which the communist society does not suffer. The Western society is just like a Vera model. No restraint, no more law. You enjoy life, you feel comfortable, and you take out of life as much as possible. And the rest you resent. You don't care for tomorrow, you're not interested in the yesteryear. You are simply, you live for the present, of course. That means a breakdown of discipline, a breakdown of order, a breakdown of a collapse of all checks and controls and restraints, I mean, which keep human society together, a disintegration society. In their flow, the difference. The Tere described their flow as a highly organized unit there. I mean, the Chazal also tried, they used to carry, you know, bricks, I mean, for years and years. And if a baby, I mean, fell from the tower, I mean, they ignored. But if a brick fell, I mean, they used to mourn and grieve over a brick. It means the invention is more important than the human being. Technological achievement is superior, I mean, to the dignity of the individual. It's well organized. Closely meet society with an army, with a youth which is conscious of its task, which marches simply straight toward a certain goal. The goal is conquest. Again, infinity. This is the challenge to which the Dera Sloga responded. And this is the greatest challenge in the eyes, was the greatest challenge in the eyes of the Dera Sloga. Communist society is the Dera Sloga. Their great challenge is technological power. And of course the idealization of man as the genius who made everything possible, who made possible for the Apollo 7 to cruise and to orbit around the Earth for 11 days. And of course again there is infinity. You reach out for the moon and find the moon for the planet and so forth. It's again man who wants to be successful. Man wants to be triumphant. Man considers himself a hero. Man hates to be defeated. He wants to be successful either as an athlete or as a powerful engineer. Abraham proclaimed a new challenge. a new idea to the world, that of Kedusha. The great challenge of man is Kedusha. Kedusha fascinates. Abraham said that man knows aspirations, hopes, visions, dreams, and yearnings. He is out not to gain power. He is out not to gain the maximum enjoyment and calm and pleasure. He is out only to find God and to cling to Him. In order to cling to God and to find God and to be close to Him, man does not have to be successful, always successful. Man can afford the luxury of being defeated. And Kedusha has a strange quality, very strange quality. I would say Kedusha is a dialectical experience. It's an antithetic experience. It frightens people, but at the same time it also pulls and attracts people. There is fascinating and daunting as far as Kedusha is concerned. It is daunting, you know, what kind of people? Who refuse to think. It frightens, you know, what kind of people? Who refuse to feel, to delve in themselves, in the mystery of man, and his strange destiny. People with platitudes, people with cliches, people who don't know themselves, are frightened by Kedusha. Because Kedusha demands sacrifice and self-deceit sometimes. However, for people blessed with sweep of imagination, depth of perception, breadth of thought, and boldness of character, Kedusha is the fascinating experience which pulls them to the bare realm unconsciously, instinctually, I would even say mechanically. And I believe I said it once, then David the psalmist described his yearning for God, his questing for God. He availed himself a strange metaphor. Ha'ayol tarek nafshi alefi kemayim, moyim ke nafshi tarek elecho ha'ishem. Like the gadel, questing, or yearning for the brook, when she is carried, so I yearn for you. Question is obvious. Why this metaphor? Why did he have to compare himself to be the gazelle, or with the deer, with an animal, or the field? He could have said, nafshi tarek elecho ha'ishem. That's all. Good enough. Why should the metaphor of the gazelle, of the ayolo, here enhance, I mean, so to say, the meaning of what he wanted to convey, that he wanted to convey? It does not. Why should it become more exalted? Why should his yearning become more exalted, more enhanced, if compared to that of a gazelle? The answer is, if you saw one, I mean, how in Africa, in the jungle, late in the afternoon, the animals begin to march, walk. All kinds of animals, buffaloes and deer, gazelles, all kinds of animals. I mean, you walk, where are they walking? To where? Do they know that over there, I mean, 5 miles away, there is a brook? The animal doesn't know it. There's no memory. There's no accumulated experience in the animal. So how do they know the way? No one can explain the way the birds find their way. I mean, when they fly the southward, I mean, in fall, I mean, they march and they march and they march. They are pulled, they are pushed, they are driven by something irrational, by something which is unexplainable. But this drive does not cease, does not terminate until the animal reaches the brood. When it reaches the brood, it stoops and drinks the water. So is man. Man is driven to the bare realm, sometimes subconsciously, unconsciously, mechanically driven. He cannot get away from the bare realm. If man tries to get away from the bare realm, it means he destroys himself. Destroys himself and destroys society. As a matter of fact, I mean, we have almost reached this stage of the game, I mean, in modern society. And of course, you know very well, if one tries to repress his basic drives, what kind of a personality he develops as a result of repression. I don't have to tell it to you. Yes. And with that, what David said, Kayol Tarek Nafshe Vafiti Moreim, unknowingly, unconsciously, mechanically, instinctually. It's not a result of my philosophy. It's not a result of my meditation. It's not a result of reflection. It's not a result of self-searching or self-examination. Of course, all these things will enhance the drive, will convert a mechanical drive into a conscious quest. But the drive exists, regardless of everything, and in spite of everything. It exists everywhere. Whether that person considers himself an atheist or an agnostic or a scientist, this drive is to be found, I mean, in every person. It drives him like the surf drives the gazelle to the brook of water. And that's exactly what Canaan meant to Abraham, what Canaan meant to God. He drove them mechanically, instinctually. And they were as restless and unhappy, exactly. Until they found the Rabbinic land in Eretz Yisrael.